With the focus on Syria, also keep an eye on an unfolding economic meltdown in one of the world's most important economies, India.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the global perspective on business and economics. Tensions over a possible U.S. and allied military strike in Syria drives up the U.S. dollar, which is seen as a safe haven. Down go other currencies, including India's rupee. Add to that rising U.S. interest rates that make dollar investments more attractive, plus underlying weakness in India's economy, and it adds up to India's worst economic crisis in 20 years. The rupee fell below 68 to the dollar today on a drop of more than 3%. Let's check in from the street level in India, Calcutta specifically, where we find our friend Rahul Tandon of the BBC.
Every morning, Indian businessmen get up and try and predict how much lower the rupee is going to fall. You know, today at one point, it was 68.75 rupees to the dollar. Some analysts are predicting it could hit 75. And the government has announced these plans to try and boost the economy by starting up 36 huge infrastructure projects. But Mr. Chidambaram, the finance minister's words seem to be having no effect at all, because hour after hour, foreign investors are moving their money out of the world's largest democracy.
Now, this isn't just an esoteric high finance story here. People living and trying to work in India will feel this devaluation on the ground.
They're feeling it already, because India has to import oil, and basically the oil prices are beginning to go up. Let me give you a few examples. This is a country that relies on onions. The price of onions in the last 3 weeks has gone up by 5 times. I talked to youngsters trying to find jobs in India at the moment. It's very hard. I'm just coming from talking to my cousin. He returned to India from Dubai 5 months ago, thinking confidently that he'd get a job in the software sector. One interview in 5 months means he's going back to the Middle East.
In an economy that not even half a year ago was seen to be booming.
Yeah, the booming Indian economy looks in the short term like it's crashing. And, you know, I think the big problem here is that we're moving towards an election year. The fear is here that until the elections next year, we could see the Indian economy continuing to slide and slide and slide.
The BBC's Rahul Tandon on a street corner in Calcutta. Rahul, thank you.
Thank you very much, David.
Now let's do the numbers. After the Dow fell 170 points yesterday, 1.1%, Dow futures this morning are down, but just slightly. The S&P is flat, and NASDAQ futures are up slightly. In London, the FT 100 right now is down 0.2%. A report this morning shows a persistent disconnect between the pay of corporate chiefs and their performance. According to the Institute for Policy Studies, nearly 40% of the highest paid CEOs either led firms that received bailout money, lost their jobs, or had to pay fraud-related fines after the financial crisis hit. Sally Herships reports on how companies decide what they pay their leaders.
When companies are hunting for a new CEO, they first make a budget, right? Well, no.
Most boards, I would say, are willing to pay almost anything if they think they have got the right person.
Carol Bowie works with Institutional Shareholder Services. She says companies first decide who they want, then go after them. Last year, the median level of CEO pay at large corporations like Apple was just over $22 million. But is it worth it?
Well, it must be, because they keep doing it.
Kevin Halleck is chair of the economics department at Cornell. He says for huge corporations with revenues in the billions, spending millions can make sense.
Having the very, very best person versus the person just below that person might be worth it, $2 or $5 or $8 million more.
But Halleck says we should focus not just on amounts, but how pay is given out, like tying salary and bonuses to the success of the company. In New York, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
Serving as a public school teacher in America. There's the joy of energizing young minds, and there are the indignities. Many teachers have to dig into their own bank accounts to pay for classroom supplies, for example. Sarah McCammon reports as the fall of 2013 academic year begins.
At Roosevelt High School in Des Moines, Iowa, English teacher Haley Malis is deep in the back-to-school ritual of setting up her classroom. Today, she's scanning books into a digital library. Malis bought most of those books, and the bookcases, too. The old ones the school provides don't really fit in her room.
I needed to be able to have furniture that I could work around so that I could have access to the whiteboards.
The English department has a supply budget, $1,500 for 12 teachers, who all teach several classes. It doesn't go far. So Melis spends about $200 of her own money just getting her classroom ready each year. But that's just the beginning.
Over the course of the year, you know, it's the little things that add up.
Things like paper and pens, anything a student might forget to bring or can't afford. Melis's colleague, school counselor Ryan Williamson, stocks school supplies in his office, and he's also bought students clothing and driven them to college visits on his own dime.
The hard part is figuring out which students need the help but are too proud to ask.
Nearly every teacher surveyed by the National School Supply and Equipment Association, 99.5%, said they use their own money for classroom needs. Last year, the average teacher shelled out close to $500. Dennis Van Roekel is president of the National Education Association.
I think teachers have always spent out of their own pocket, but I think it has really gone up as school supply budgets have decreased.
But the same economic forces that put pressure on schools and families also affect teachers. The survey found that while teacher spending is rising, it's still less than before the recession. Colleen Breiner-Schmidt is president of a teachers union in Thousand Oaks, California.
The last couple of years, when we've all taken pay cuts, it's been harder and harder to reach into our pockets.
But she says teachers still do what they can to make sure students are ready to learn, even if their own paychecks take a hit. I'm Sarah McCammon for Marketplace.
And glad to see we're early on the curve here at Marketplace, using all the new lingo before it gets into the Oxford Online Dictionary. There's news they're adding Bitcoin, and the camera phone pictures are your own face, the selfie. Now, I'm into this one, digital detox, turning off all the stuff from time to time, everything but the radio, of course. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.